The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Support for this show comes from the National Wellness Institute, committed to providing the tools, trainings, and resources to propel your career in wellness. Become a member today at nationalwellness.org.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, I'm Rabbi Rami, and this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today is Dr. Leo Weiss, a founding faculty member of the Dalai Lama's Compassion and Cultivation Program at Stanford University. Leo Weiss is also a lecturer at Stanford Business School and a researcher and meditation expert. She's dedicated her life to teaching people how to leverage research-based mindfulness and compassion insights to create outstanding leaders and a thriving work environment. Her new book is How We Work: Live Your Purpose, Reclaim Your Sanity, and Embrace the Daily Grind. You can read Sam Moe's interview with Dr. Weiss in the March-April issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. Leo Weiss, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm very happy to talk to you. The book was really fascinating. And honestly, there's so much in here, and our time together is so short. I'm just going to focus on one aspect of this, and if that's okay with you, and you can bring in anything else you want. But the notion of living your purpose just speaks to me. I don't know if it speaks to me because I'm trying to live my purpose, or I've given up on living my purpose, or I have no purpose. I'm not sure what it is, but there's something about purpose that I thought we could explore. And you talk about it. It's sort of at the heart of your book, and you talk about it. You this is a quote from the book, you know, purpose with a capital P is how you put it. And I'd like to just explore this for a while. So tell us how you understand purpose with a capital P.
I think for me, purpose with a capital P is the purpose that we can come back to, that we can orient ourselves by. And the metaphor that I most appreciate about purpose is specifically the metaphor of a puzzle box top, that we need to use purpose. We need to use the puzzle box top to guide how we're putting together the pieces. We need to continually refer to it and put ourselves in conversation with it, which I think is a great way of understanding what we need to do with our purpose in our day-to-day life. If it doesn't translate into making sense and mapping onto the mundane, then it's not going to be of service to us.
Okay, so is this purpose sort of built into the fabric of the universe, or is it something that we create just as individuals?
Well, I think I love the first part of your question. The way I approach it in the context of the book is that we need to find an articulation of the purpose that fits for us. That doesn't preclude the idea that there may be a bigger sense of purpose in the universe that we need to connect with. But tabling that question, your sense of purpose isn't going to do me a whole lot of good. I need to have my own reflected on an integrated version that I'm comfortable with and referring back to over and over again.
But you did say we find it. And I want to talk to you a little bit about how we do that. You've got this really interesting way of assessing values and what makes us happy and is an attempt to find our purpose. But when we say find our purpose, it sounds like the purpose already exists and we have to find it. Is that really how you understand it, or do we just sort of make it up either as we go along or just once and for all?
Well, that's a great question. When I use the term finding our purpose, what I'm pointing to is a dynamic that we talk about within the context of psychology of using our emergent values, of aligning and understanding our values as a way to get at a deeper sense of purpose. And this is one of the techniques that I talk about in the book, drawing on research about what happens when we reflect on our lives, reflect on our choices, reflect on the impact that our sense of meaningfulness of our work and contributions may or may not have. So I don't mean purpose in the sense of it's, you know, a diamond buried that we have to find, but I do describe it as something that we have running through our lives. So one of the exercises I describe in the book is using a reflection over what we've done in our lives and telling a brief story of our life to another person, having them feed back the values they're hearing in that and using that as a springboard for a conversation about what is meaningful to me and are there things that I've acted on that are meaningful to me that are not fully conscious that I could be more aware of and become more proactive towards. So when I talk about finding, I don't mean also in this final sense. I think that like the puzzle metaphor, we have to continually return to it and update it. So whether we're doing that as an individual, as an organization in the context of a business, or religious traditions have to do this over time too, to understand what an idea means in the historical cultural context in which it currently lives.
Yeah. Are you familiar with a therapy in Japan? I don't know if therapy is the right word, but in Japan called Morita.
No, I'm not.
So there was this guy, Morita. He was a contemporary of Freud. And he developed a therapy. It's one of the two major therapeutic schools in Japan. And his, I'm reducing this huge body of work to three sentences, which is how my teacher sort of summed it up. And it's know your purpose, accept your feelings, and do what must be done to fulfill your purpose. And he, in a sense, and again, I'm oversimplifying, but he, in a sense, made a distinction between your purpose and your feelings. Your feelings come and go, he said. They may or may not be controllable at any given moment, but your purpose is steady once you know what it is, once you've found it, as you said, or you know, articulated it. And sometimes your feelings are going to be such that they will encourage you to fulfill your purpose, to do what must be done. And sometimes they're not. You just don't feel like it. But in Morita therapy, they teach you how to simply follow your purpose, promote your purpose, regardless of the transient feelings that are going through your head. It's based on Buddhism, Zen Buddhism specifically. So I'm wondering, in your book, I got a sense that feelings, it's not like Morita. Morita says, in a sense, feelings are not a good guide to your purpose. But in your book, I get a sense that feelings are, in fact, an excellent guide to discovering my purpose. Is that fair?
Yes, I would say that the reason that they're a useful guide is that emotions, the physical experience that we're having, one of the really interesting things about the time we're in now with research is that we have a better understanding of how our bodies are registering our environment, and which actually relates to the sense of purpose. There's all kinds of health benefits in terms of our physiology, from our glycemic index to preventing risk of Alzheimer's disease, sleep, you name it, all inflammation, antiviral response, from having a stronger sense of purpose. Now, when we talk about our emotions, emotions, according to the current research, are also actually rooted in our body. They're our way of our body to make sense about our environment. And we can use them to understand and to make decisions. And this relates to the work of the Nobel laureate Kahneman, who talks about intuition as recognition. And the recognition is a recognition that's a very embodied way of understanding our experience. So to make this like much more practical for our listeners, I assign to my students to go pay attention for a week, all the activities that they're going through at the end of the day, each day to log which things they feel passionate about, which are the things they are procrastinating, what they're anxious about, as much data as they can collect about their internal, emotional, physical experience of their day. This then feeds into the conversation about what is my capital P purpose and how closely am I aligning my actions towards this purpose.
And you can tell when you're unaligned that, I mean, your emotions will sort of give you feedback, I guess, positively or negatively. But I'm interested just for a moment in the negative, that if you're really not connecting to your purpose, you have psychological and biological, if you want to make the distinction, I don't know. But there's going to be changes in your physical body and changes in your psychological state that will point out the fact that you're out of alignment with your purpose. Is that true?
That's exactly along the lines of what I'm getting at. And you can see in your own experience, because a lot of times we have ideas about what we're good at or what we care about, but when it comes down to actually implementing those activities, we don't do it. And that's an important thing to understand. And it doesn't mean that it's not a value of ours, but the only way we can get at this to understand, where am I not embodying what I say is most important to me? Where am I avoiding it? And really understand, is that resistance because it's so meaningful, there's something at risk for me and actually directly pursuing it? Or is there something else that would make more sense for me to orient myself towards at this point in time? So that's the way that this process unfolds.
When you look at people, when you're talking to people about their purpose, do you ever run into something where, well, let's say they're trying to fulfill the purpose their parents imposed on them? They had a purpose, they had a passion, their parents didn't respect it, they pushed them in a different direction, and now they're conflicted. I mean, how much damage do parents do when they're following their purpose and assuming it's also the norm and their kids should follow that same purpose?
I think that it's a key question that we need to understand, that the operative assumptions we have about what's meaningful to us, that we have understood their origin, whether that's from parents or other peer groups. We need to do we need to look at for ourselves and understand where the origin of our values and priorities come from. And I think that's actually just part of the process of becoming an adult and individuating. And it's also something that will continue in more and more subtlety throughout the lifespan, that will recognize ways in which we've adopted perspectives. Because like the metaphor goes, culture is like water or for a fish or air for us. We can't see it. We don't see the influence directly, but there are ways in which we absorb the worldview that may or may not fit for us personally. So that needs to be an ongoing assessment, and for sure with in relation to parents. And I think that this is something I keep in mind in parenting. My kids are still very young, but not making assumptions about who they are, what they want to focus on, what they're passionate about, what they love, that we're not raising them to become miniature versions of ourselves to fulfill our own ego needs, but to appreciate the process that they need to excavate their values and purpose and identity.
So you have three children. What are the age ranges?
7, 4, and 3.
So, and I have a 2-year-old grandson. His purpose is just to get more dinosaurs. So I don't know how long that purpose will last. But do you notice, now 3 may be too young, I don't know, but at some point, can you notice your 7-year-old's purpose? Do you see a difference in the three of them as far as what might be driving them?
I do. It's funny, actually, the 3-year-old is very, very interested in questions about God. He's always talking about Hashem, and way more than the other two siblings. He's just very interested in understanding what, just asking existential questions. My oldest is very interested in nature and how things work and, you know, sort of details of flowers and leaves and kind of ecology and animals. I definitely see differences. And the middle one has his own, he wants to be a punk rocker, but I think there's a lot of musicality and movement. Yes.
So you've got a rabbi, a scientist, and a musician in the family. That's pretty exciting. Do these change? I mean, they must, right? And they must change over time. The purpose is it tied to like Piaget's, you know, developmental understanding of child psychology? Is there, can a parent or grandparent look at their kid and say, oh, they're in this stage and their purpose is going to be around X, and then it'll change as they age?
I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. And I think one thing that's clear is that it's vital across the lifespan to have a sense of purpose. And this is becoming the big aha for retirement, right? The third act, that people who are engaged in their communities and have a strong sense of purpose or through their education are living longer, healthier lives. And our teenagers who have that a sense of purpose that is important to them are more resilient in the face of all kinds of challenges that they're experiencing. So I think that is a really useful way to describe it. And then I think one of the challenges or opportunities becomes at each stage to support people in understanding that purpose is part of what it means to be human, which, circling back to the biology piece I was talking about before, we're healthier when we have purpose. I think that's really important. We are purpose driven right down to our cellular level. And I think that that's something, if we acknowledge that, then we need to look at things like our education systems and the organizations where we spend time in and how we're structuring our interactions. So we're really acknowledging and honoring and supporting that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me also. I mean, when I was reading the book, I'm trying to look back over my life and say, okay, what were my main purposes? It's when I was in high school, what my passion, and I'm sort of maybe equating passion with purpose, but my passion was to be a famous author. And when I was in rabbinical school, my passion was to, reinvent Judaism in my own image. And today, I'm 67 years old. My purpose is to have a good bowel movement every day. I don't know if that's a little if that's a little too much information, but you know, that's what's important to me at the moment, not this very moment, but you get the idea. So can you see in your life, I mean, because now you're a parent, you've got these three kids, and you're a researcher, and you're an author, and do all these parts of your life coalesce around a single purpose? Or do you see multiple purposes functioning because of the multiple roles you have?
Profound question. I think for me, there's been multiple across time. I think if I were asked to reflect and give a theme for how I want them to be, I think that compassion or service or focus on other people is, I've learned over time, both through research and my own exploration of a whole bunch of purposes, some of them not particularly helpful to myself or others. I think that at this point, I would push myself to raise my gaze and see where any particular struggle or opportunity, even if it's in parenting, to understand, you know, this challenge I'm having with my toddler is an example of what it means to be a parent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And of course, we're running out of time, so we can't explore it any further, but that is very interesting. Let me ask you, and these were all sort of global philosophical questions, but let me ask you one last question. It just seemed from reading the book that there was a dimension that I wanted to get your take on that your research doesn't actually focus on and the book doesn't focus on. But, you know, we're living in these incredibly difficult times, you know, politically, socially, the rise of autocracies, the collapse of the environment. I mean, all these things that you have to be concerned about just thinking about your kids, as I am about my grandson. So even though I realize that you're really focused on individuals discovering their purpose and using it to their best interest, is there a purpose to our species that we ought to align ourselves with? Do you have any sense of that?
So the way I think about it is I feel that getting back to understanding purpose and the importance of humanity and compassion in our organizations, in our relationships with one another, in my mind, is the way out of our collective issues that we're not going to be able to solve if we do not reimagine what it means to be what it means to be a leader, what it means to be a parent. And so in my mind, these skills and these frameworks that I am talking about in the book and teaching to the graduate students I work with and the organizations I work with, it really comes back to this need to expect more of ourselves in the day-to-day and to understand that these small choices that we make day in and day out about how we treat one another, the lines we decide to cross, the ethical choices we're making, that these add up and really matter. So that's where I find my capital P purpose. And I see this connecting back with the big picture in a really fundamental way.
That makes sense, especially coming from someone who's founding faculty member of the Dalai Lama's Compassion and Cultivation Program. So yeah, I mean, certainly compassion has got to be at the heart of the human purpose with a capital P. So this is really great. We're going to have to leave it here, Leah, but thank you very much for talking with us. Our guest today was Dr. Leah Weiss. Her new book is How We Work: Live Your Purpose, Reclaim Your Sanity, and Embrace the Daily Grind. You can read an interview with her in the March-April issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. Leah, thanks so much for being with us on Essential Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to talk to you. Support for this show comes from the National Wellness Institute, committed to providing the tools, training, and resources to propel your career in wellness. Become a member today at nationalwellness.org. Before we sign off, let me remind you that this year is the 20th anniversary of Spirituality and Health magazine. As part of our celebration, I'm leading an interspiritual tour of the Holy Land. This is part tour, part pilgrimage, as we engage in contemplative practices linked to the various sites we will visit, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, and Baha'i. Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is a project of Spirituality and Health magazine. Please log in to spiritualityhealth.com to subscribe to the magazine in print or digital formats, and to download the iTunes app for this podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a review. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker, and our program coordinator and executive producer is Alma Tassi. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.